Welcome to episode 11 of the Field Pass Podcast. As always, I'm Asher Miller, and today we have another great guest. He is ESPN's draft analysis guru, Mr. Mel Kiper Jr. How are you?
Asher, great to be with you. That's 41 years now doing this, 46 actually, in the business. So you'll be starting soon. You'll get your career going in a few years once you get college over with, and then you might be working at ESPN with me one of these days. That'd be great.
Hey, there we go. We have another great episode. We got a bunch of draft talk, as well as some look as maybe some potential trades that could happen come draft day or maybe before. That being said, sit back, relax, welcome down the field. This is the first little segment I like to call Get to Know Your Guest. So how did you get started in this business? And how did you get involved with ESPN?
Right when you at your age, basically. I was at Calvert Hall, which high school here in Baltimore, decided my sophomore, junior year to start writing reports, sent them out to the NFL teams, got a lot of responses, wanted to find out from them how they could improve, how we could improve the report, what I could add to it. They gave a lot of suggestions. I got letters from all different head coaches, general managers, even some owners that would send me responses to the letter and read the report. And then when I started college, I started actually putting it out to the public and also sending it to the NFL teams, continued that all the way through till 83, 84, when I got offered an opportunity to work for the Baltimore Colts here. Mm-hmm. But the general manager, Ernie Accorsi, who was going to hire me, found out the team may be moving. They had traded his quarterback, John Elway, without his knowledge. So he called me and said, hey, just keep doing what you're doing. A few months later, I got a call from ESPN to go up and interview for the draft position that they had, draft analysis position, and got that in 1983, 84 area. Started with the draft in 84 and ever since then been working up there doing all the stuff that you see me doing. So basically, it was just being persistent with the report, sending them to all the NFL people, and also making it available to the public. And that started the business going. We were advertising in Sporting News, Pro Football Weekly, Football News, everything like that. And then basically picked up from there and then started that subscribership moving forward. Then ESPN, I was going to actually give up the business, Asher, in 1984 to go to work for the Colts. I said, hell with everything. We're just going to go to work for the Colts and see how that goes. And then that didn't work out. And then without that happening, without the opportunity not arising with the Colts, I would have never been at ESPN. So because I would have been with the Colts, that position right. Opened 4 or 5 months later. So it was basically good luck, good fortune that I was able to get that job with ESPN, because at that point it looked like I was just going to, like I say, go into the NFL. And if that wouldn't have worked out 2 or 3 years down the road, ESPN would have filled that role. And then who knows what I would have done, because you can't go back to the business when you've already been out of the loop for 3 years. So that would have been tough to do. So who knows, had you just like a little bump in the road, had that happened, probably wouldn't be here today talking to you.
When do you start making your mock drafts for the upcoming season?
I start right away. As soon as the season drafts over in May, I start right up putting the reports out on the players for next year's draft. We'll actually have Todd McShay used to do, Todd used to do his first look at the draft, like a couple days afterwards. Todd would have a mock up. He probably will this year, even though he's not at ESPN right now. You know, Todd's going to put out his first mock. I'm sure somebody, Field Yates, who I work with, will. I don't. I just have ratings on the players, Asher, that comes out basically a couple of weeks after the draft. We start getting it all together and then in August get it ready. But basically, for the day three of the draft, if you're watching day three, I'll have the top 10 for next year and the top 5 quarterbacks already up. So the work starts right after the draft. I do the draft grade show on ESPN the Monday after the draft. I do all the follow the reports. We have a special coming on that day as well. So that'll all be up on ESPN.com. And as soon as that's put to bed and it's over with, we do our big review show on the Daria and Mel show the following Saturday. Once that's finished, Asher, it's all fast forward. It's full steam ahead for 2025 draft. And that's basically the times of the year that you get to really work on evaluating players the most. Is May, June, July, and August, because nobody's bothering you with stuff. You got the whole summer to relax, regenerate, but also study players for the following year's draft. So a right. lot of the work that I do looking forward to next year's draft happens in those 3 or 4 months leading up to the season.
That, I will say, is pretty early, and I did not expect people to start that early for mock draft, but...
Yeah, and in fact, you know what, Asher? You're some of the best reports that you have on players, the most accurate reports, is during those months. When I go back and read some of the things I wrote and some of the ratings that I had, sometimes they're more accurate than what you do after it's all said and done. Because sometimes the player will have a little bit of an injury his final year. He won't play as well, and you adjust it down when you should have kept it where it was. So football is a game of that, Asher. You have a lot of guys that are playing hurt. That's why I say, why isn't he playing as well as he did the previous year? Because he wasn't 100%, or he was in a different coordinator took over, whatever. So there's a lot of factors go in to why a player may not have performed this year like he did the previous year. And you got to factor all that in. So sometimes your gut feel and what you thought at that point is sometimes more accurate than what you see and what you feel at the end of the whole process.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you use any specific formula, I guess, to come up with these mock drafts?
Yeah, you have, well, for the mock drafts, for the ratings, you have at each position a certain criteria that you're looking at for each player at each position. So you basically go through and see how it all adds up, how you grade. It's all subjective, and it changes because every game that you watch, a player may get your attention positively or negatively, and you have to adjust. That's why this business is so hard, Ash. That's why teams make all these mistakes. People say, why aren't they perfect? Why are a lot of these draft choices disappointments? I'm just in there doing the rankings now, and it's hard to separate a lot of players. And it's basically gets down to trying to put together a lot of opinions. You're in a room with a lot of different area scouts, personnel people that all have different views. And as a general manager, you have to put that all together. So I'm basically independent. All what we do is independent of teams, which makes it even more difficult because you're trying to rate players as a whole, as opposed to what we want with a team, what we want to do with our defense, linebackers, secondary, offense, special teams, all the things that we want to do as a organization, I have to look at as covering all 32. Mm-hmm. So that makes it even more difficult. So player evaluation, I can just tell you, is an inexact science. It's very difficult and it's challenging. It's 100 years from now, there will never be a perfect formula for any position. It's always going to be mistakes. There's more mistakes made at quarterback now, Asher, than it's been in the history of the NFL, basically. And it started out where they couldn't figure out quarterback with the late, great Johnny Unitas. And they still can't figure out quarterback. And I know I struggle with it. Everybody does. Evaluating quarterbacks in particular, very difficult.
Okay. And now we're going to move out of get to know your guest, and we're going to get into mock draft.
Okay.
Give me your first five picks come Thursday.
You know, if I had to do it right now, and that's no trades involved, and there probably will be a couple, but if just look at the way it could come off the board, the players could come off the board. At one, it's Caleb Williams. I think you can mark that in pen. Two, Jaden Daniels is where I'm going. You hear a lot of Drake May talk there for Washington. I'm going Jaden Daniels. And three is where really gets interesting, Asher. Yeah. You have New England. They need a quarterback as much as anybody does. Are they going to trade out, let somebody else come in and get that quarterback, like, say, Drake May, if he's there, does it go two? Jaden Daniels, I think, would be their pick. But if it's open at three, who trades in? Is it Minnesota, who seems to have a lot of interest in Drake May? Do they want to give up the 11, the 23, and a first-round pick next year and a third? Give up a lot of draft capital to go up and get Drake May? Looks like they may. And if New England moves off of three and moves down to 11, what if the quarterbacks are gone of the top four?
Right.
Or do they move up to get J.J. McCarthy? Do they stay where they are at 11 and take Michael Penix Jr. or Bo Nix? So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how New England handles it. There's going to be a quarterback at some point for New England, and a quarterback in that spot. Arizona at four could trade out. Monty Austin Fort, the general manager, traded back, then traded back up. So he made two deals early to get the offensive tackle here. Could he do the same thing to get a receiver like Romo Odunze, who figures to maybe be the third receiver off the board? And then at five, what does the Chargers do? The Chargers take a receiver. They need one, but they could trade down and then look at an offensive tackle or receiver if they move off of that. If they keep five, I got to believe it's a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Some people think offensive tackle. Maybe they take Joe Walton, move him from left tackle to right tackle. Maybe they take J.C. Latham from Alabama. I think they would take a receiver. Like, so if Neighbors is there, Neighbors or Odunze from Washington, both are great. You're splitting hairs between, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., right. Malik Neighbors and Romo Odunze. So all three of those kids are going to go high. But to answer your question, top five right now would be the three quarterbacks, at basically one, two, three. At four, probably Marvin Harrison Jr. if they keep the pick. And five, the Chargers. I would say Malik Neighbors if they keep the pick. But don't expect that to happen. Some of those picks, right, I think, will be traded.
Okay. So do you think the Giants, who, in my opinion, I think the Giants need a quarterback, do you think they're going to trade up into the top five?
Here's my feeling, Asher. If you have Daniel Jones, you can like him, not like him, whatever. I happen to like him. Mm-hmm. You're paying him. 2 years ago, he won a playoff game against Kirk Cousins. He just got a lot of money to move on. Now he's the quarterback in Atlanta, right?
Yep.
They beat Minnesota in Minnesota in a playoff game. This past year, the offensive line was terrible. He didn't have any receivers of kind. They haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver in 6 years. Mm-hmm. They haven't had any explosive plays because they don't have the receiver to make them. The offensive line is the reason why he gets hurt. So he's had durability. Get the talent around him. Then you can evaluate the quarterback. Until you get everything working, how can you evaluate Daniel Jones? 2 years ago, he looked pretty good. They paid him. They made that decision. Brian Daboll and Joe Shane made the decision. We inherited this quarterback. We had some questions about. He answered those questions. We paid him. Then he gets hurt, and the wheels came off. You're going to blame him? Now go get another quarterback, and you're not going to get the receiver. So Daniel Jones is coming off a couple of injuries. Yeah, it's going to be a restructured offensive line. They added 4 free agents, right? So that hopefully will be better. But you don't get Malik Nabers or Romo Odunze, and you're sitting there with a quarterback who still has a problem making explosive plays in the passing game.
Right.
So I would take the receiver myself. You keep hearing all this talk that they want a quarterback. You've heard it all. You want a quarterback, right?
Yep.
So which one are you going to get? Three of them are going to be gone probably. Three will be gone by the third pick.
Right.
Unless you want to jump from 6 to 3, if you want to do that and give up some draft capital next year as well, all of a sudden you could go up and get Drake May or J.J. McCarthy. So, again, we'll see what they decide to do. Asher, you know this as well as anybody. What do teams like to do? They like to have their own quarterback.
Right,
So Joe Shane and Brian Daboll did not draft Daniel Jones, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they liked him enough to pay him, but they would like to get their own guy. Everybody wants their own quarterback. So if it's Drake May, if it's J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, people say, resembles Josh Allen. I don't see that myself. Mm-hmm. Josh Allen is 6'5", 240. He can run around. Drake May can move and run. He's not going to run like Josh Allen, and he doesn't have the howitzer like Josh Allen. So, and he doesn't have that mindset of being the guy out there that was just the most competitive player that Craig Bohl said he ever coached. When I talked to Craig Bohl, who coached Josh at Wyoming, most competitive player he ever coached. Drake's competitive, but are you to the level of Josh Allen? If you are, great. But Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, if you want to move up, if you stay at 6, Asher, and you're the Giants, I don't think you're getting a quarterback. Maybe McCarthy at 6 could be there. I don't think Drake May is there at 6.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting to me because I feel like the Giants, because, I mean, everybody I talk to, they're like, oh, Daniel Jones, he's not the same. Nobody's the same after an ACL injury. The Giants need a quarterback. But, I mean, I agree with you that they honestly don't have any playmakers. They lost Saquon. Their best receiver right now is arguably Jalen Hyatt. I mean, and I think that kid can show some flashes, you know.
But Wandale Robinson maybe could. There's some players there, but no Nabers or Odunze.
Right.
That's the problem. They don't have that go-to number one guy. I haven't had 1,000-yard receiver since 2018, Odell Beckham Jr. So, again, I understand people with Daniel. I get it. Remember, a lot of people didn't like Daniel coming out as a first-round pick, as a high top 10 guy. What happens, and Louis Riddick, my good friend Lou, said that this week, what people tend to do when they don't like the quarterback, they want to be proven correct. So, Daniel Jones didn't any good. I didn't like him coming out. Then that's what happens. If people like Josh Allen, I had a battle for Josh Allen for years. It wasn't until year 3 when they started to give him a break because most people didn't like him. So those people that were now is the defense attorney for Josh Allen. I was the defense attorney last year for Will Levis. I mean, everybody's hating on Will. He goes in the second round, had a really good rookie year considering he had no offensive line and no speed at wide receiver. So the bottom line is, as your people try to justify through their commentary what they thought coming out until they're completely have to shut the heck up like they did with Josh Allen and just get on board. Because up until year 3, there were a lot of people trying to prove themselves right by saying Josh Allen's overrated. He's not that good. So they're going to do the same thing with Will Levis. They've done it with Daniel Jones. Notice that it's the ones they don't like coming out that have to prove everybody wrong. All the doubters and skeptics had to be proven wrong without any argument at all. There can't be any argument because if there's an argument, they'll keep saying he's not that good. But when all the arguments are over and they can't say it anymore, those people that didn't like those quarterbacks will go 3-4 years trying to be proven right.
Right. Okay. Do you think there are any under-the-radar prospects this year?
Well, there's a lot of them at the various positions. If you want to just take a quarterback, I mean, under the radar is Michael Pratt Tulane under the radar. What's going to happen now, Asher, is this is what goes on in the NFL. When you get a Brock Purdy as Mr. Irrelevant, right? What's everybody say? Who's the next Brock Purdy? Right. I don't have a crystal ball sitting here. I got a bottle of water. I don't have a crystal ball. Okay, I'm not a psychic. So I'm not – everybody said after Tom Brady, let's find the next sixth-round quarterback, right?
Yeah.
You haven't found them. Brock Purdy came along, Mr. You're not going to find him. So good luck. It ain't going to happen. So at the end of the day, maybe Michael Pratt from Tulane is a fifth round type of pick. Remember 2 years ago, he outdueled Caleb Williams in their bowl game, had a great year. You know how many offensive coordinators in 4 years at Tulane Michael Pratt's had? Four.
Wow.
He had several in high school. He's a smart kid recruited by Ivy League schools, right? He's on his fourth coordinator. He's a finished with his fourth coordinator. You can't have that. You got to have continuity. He had to battle through that. He won a ton of games. If you want to look at maybe Keaton Slovis has bounced around three different schools, right? Looked great when he was at USC when he started his career. Then he goes to Pitt, didn't work out there. Goes to BYU, was okay. Maybe Keaton Slovis turns out to be a little better than advertised. So right. Those are some guys from the quarterback spot that are a little maybe – because they had to move on to another school. And in terms of Keaton Slovis, it didn't necessarily go the way he had hoped when he was at USC. Maybe that's a player that can surprise, like I said, Michael Pratt, because he didn't have the great year in 2023, he did in 2022. Maybe he drops a little bit. But under the radar, nobody there. In terms of there's a lot of run. I've always been one that said, no running backs in the first round. I'd like to hear how you feel about it, Asher, because I started 25 years ago saying never take a running back in the first round. I don't care about Zeke Elliott, Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey's won his second team. He got to a Super Bowl. Right. Leonard Fournette won a Super Bowl, won his second team. Yeah. Not a team that drafted him. So I've said, wait until the second round, third round to get your running back. Don't take a running back in round one. To me, that's the best way to go. But there's going to be a lot of guys that go third, fourth, fifth round at running back this year that I think pay dividends. So, yes, there are a lot of guys that are under the radar in a variety of spots. That's what makes this draft, I think, the most interesting in any draft I've covered in 46 years. So yeah. Because there's so many good players at a variety of positions, there's a lot of mixed opinion. And there's a lot of teams that obviously need quarterbacks, which make it even more interesting at the top of the draft.
Now, I want to go back. We just talked about the Giants, but I want to talk about them a little bit more because, you know, I'm in New Jersey. But all my friends say Giants are almost guaranteed, not guaranteed, that's not the right word, but like they're really pushing to draft Malik Nabers. I mean, I've heard that everywhere. Do you think that's going to happen?
I hope. If I'm a Giants fan, I would hope it would happen unless you want a quarterback desperately. If you want the quarterback, which is, I always want the next best thing. It's always the case because if you got your quarterback, he's never good enough. You think you always want to have this fantasy island mentality that the next quarterback we draft is going to be great. And look at all the busts of the quarterbacks that all were, you know, brilliant coming out. They were perfect. They were going to be Pro Bowlers. They're going to be franchise quarterbacks, and they never materialized into much at all. Right. So with Daniel Jones, if you say Daniel Jones, we're going to give him a year to show what he can do. Hopefully he can stay healthy coming off the injury. You got to get him Malik Nabers or Romo Dunze, one of those two. And in this case, it would probably be Malik. Although I'll tell you what, Asher, there's not much separating Marvin Harrison Jr. I love Marvin Harrison Jr. He's my number one receiver. But there's not much separating Malik Nabers and Romo Dunze. I had Dunze as my second receiver all the way up to the speed factor. When I have two guys equal, I'll go with the faster guy. So I went with Nabers. Now, you can make an argument Dunze should have remained there. You're splitting hairs. So I would probably give the edge slightly to Nabers, but if you took Dunze, I would have no problem with that pick.
Okay. Now, staying on the topic of Marvin Harrison Jr., do you think it's going to affect him a little bit that he did not do the combine or his pro day?
No, I mean, it's the trend now. Did it affect? Remember, Christian McCaffrey said, I'm not playing in the bowl game at Stanford.
Yeah.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. Did it affect Christian McCaffrey? Leonard Fournette said, I'm not playing. It started that trend of don't play in bowl games. Why risk injury, right? Remember Jalen Smith, Notre Dame linebacker, hurt against Ohio State and affected his career, dropped into the second round. Players have done enough. And again, you don't have to do any of this stuff because the NFL says you have to. Remember, Bill Tobin says, we don't have to draft anybody. Mel Kiper says we have to draft. That was 30 years ago, by the way, with that. Who the hell is Mel Kiper stuff, right? Well, all you can tell me, Asher, is they don't have to draft who I tell them to draft. And the players don't have to do what they tell them to do before they're signing that contract. Once you sign that contract, you're an NFL. You're with that team, right? Right now, you're a free agent. You're free to do what you're not drafted yet in the NFL. And the NFL, you have to go where you're drafted. You have to go whatever city you're drafted into. The players have some control, though, that they're taking some control over the NIL now. Mm-hmm. You see what players are making now, right? Yes. So players are professionals now before they get into the NFL. Couldn't do that before. Now they're saying, no, I'm not going out there and doing this stuff. First at the combine, I'm going to go there and I'll do some stuff. He said, I'll do what I want to do. So again, you're not going to hold that against the player. Marvin Harrison Jr., like his dad, who I was with at the Hula Bowl back in the 90s, is a great kid. He's all business. He'll work as hard as any player on that team, and he'll be the fourth pick overall to the Arizona Cardinals. If he doesn't go four, he's going to go somewhere in that top five. Yeah. And like I said, he's going to be a great player. Larry Fitzgerald came out of Pitt. People were talking about him. Well, you know, is he as great as advertised? He turned out to be. People now are questioning a little bit about Marvin Harrison Jr. I'd be shocked if he wasn't a great player in the NFL. Because guess what? His numbers each year were about the same. In fact, his average per catch went up this year, despite having Kyle McCord, a quarterback, who's now at Syracuse, as you know.
Yeah.
Right? The other guys had Jaden Daniels and Michael Penix Jr. He had Kyle McCord, who's not even there anymore. And his numbers, his receptions went down a little bit. Average per catch went up. Touchdowns remained the same, 14 and 14. So again, if he doesn't get hurt against Georgia 2 years ago, remember that game? When he got hurt at the end of the third quarter, Javon Bullard to say hit him and he was out. If he didn't get hurt, they had control of that game. Ohio State wins that game and may go on and win a national title. So that's how valuable he was to the Buckeyes and what a great player he is. And I'll tell you what, nobody like his dad, nobody works harder than Marvin Harrison Sr. And nobody's going to work harder than Marvin Harrison Jr.
I mean, I'm really excited to see what this kid can do in the NFL. Yep. And now I'm an Eagles fan. So I need to ask you, who do you see them taking at pick 22? I've seen a lot about Cooper DeJean.
Love Cooper DeJean. I don't know if he'll even be there. He may. I did in the last mock have him there. Then he could runs that 4.42. We knew he was going to be fast and athletic. You knew that. You didn't have to have it happen. Oh, we got to see him work out. Why? You know he's going to be a great workout. And he was a great player, right? He had three pick sixes in 2022. Remember that punt return where he had that fair catch signal? He called it back that it beat Minnesota with his play. He gets nothing but behind him at corner. I think he's a corner. If you want to say safety, he's a corner. And I think, at the end of the day, I made him the best defensive back in this draft is Cooper DeJean. I don't care where you play him. He's the best defensive back. He's now ready to go. He's healthy. He will be a great player. So if he's there, yes, you have to take him. Will he be there? Debatable. Nate Wiggins with the 4.28 speed, which is what you need. You need recovery speed. You need athleticism, recovery speed, youth in that secondary. Nate Wiggins would provide that. I think I got to go corner with that first round pick.
So if you see Cooper DeJean falling a little bit, do you think Howie Roseman would trade up to get him?
It's going to be tempting to trade up, but they always historically, you know this, Asher, what do they like to draft? O-line, D-line, right? D-line. That's what they like to do. And that's been their history. That's where they feel comfortable. That's where they feel they want to put their money. O-line, D-line. Could they draft an offensive lineman? Yeah. Amarius Mims from Georgia only played 8 games, but he's a tremendous talent. You saw his hands are huge. Arms are double mine. There's going to be opportunities to get an offensive lineman. So I think you could look at that and say maybe O-line. They go D-line, but I think corner is such a pressing need that I'd be surprised if they take one. To answer your question, trading up, who knows? Maybe it depends on what type of grade they have on Cooper DeJean or Nate Wiggins. If they start sliding, or do they want to take another corner? Suppose they like Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo and they like Terry and Arnold from Alabama above the other guys. And then maybe they try to go up and get them. So maybe I think Wiggins could be there. There's a possibility DeJean is. So if you want DeJean, maybe you got to go up. Maybe get lucky. Sometimes, Asher, in the draft, sometimes you just get lucky and a guy you want falls right to you. And you say, man, they didn't have to trade up. They waited it out. They were patient. You know when that happens usually? When you got two guys you really like and you're gambling at one of those two will be there. Yeah. So if they like Wiggins and DeJean, maybe they just roll the dice that one of those two will be there. Arnold and Mitchell figure to go a little earlier. But if we get one of those two corners, either Wiggins or DeJean, maybe they feel like, okay, we're happy and we don't have to give up any draft capital.
I think they should draft corner, but I'm not Howie Roseman, so I don't have control of this. Last question for you. Sticking a little bit on the trades with the Eagles, of course. Mm-hmm. Do you think Howie Roseman's going to do another blockbuster trade?
You know, I think you would project at some point in this draft they're going to move up or down and around. That's just the way it is. You're going to get into some round where you're going to feel comfortable with what you have. You're going to feel like moving back and getting picks for next year's draft is a better way to go. And you got to realize there's going to be – and that's one of the reasons too, Asher. You always want to project ahead and look at players for next year's draft to see what positions are stronger or weaker, to get an idea about that, because that can impact some of the things you do later in the draft, particularly day 3, where you might say, hey, this pick, I'll give it up. Sometimes you'll give up a 5 to get a 4 next year.
Right.
Or a 6 to get a 5. So sometimes that plays it. If you feel like you've done enough, your roster looks good, you want to start getting some capital for next year, you tend to do that. So yeah, I would say I'd bet on one of those picks being dealt. I can't say it's a first round pick, but most of these teams will try to move up or move down at some point over the 7 round draft.
Okay. And is there anybody in particular or any position in particular you can see Howie Roseman trading for?
You know, I think at some point in time, they don't really need a lot. I mean, this is a good football team, as you know. Yeah. They're pretty good. I mean, they were really good, and then some things happened. And I think another receiver wouldn't hurt. I mean, they got a couple of veterans. I wouldn't mind adding to what they have at wide receiver. Get another guy who's not just a journeyman veteran, because that's what they have at 3 and 4, right? Go out and maybe get a receiver. They always like the linebacker position, they like to wait on, but there's going to be some possibilities there. They obviously like to go in the trenches. They're not that far away, but I think they need I'd be surprised if they didn't draft a couple defensive backs. Not one, but probably two.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mel, thank you so much for doing this. I really, 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 really appreciate it.
Asher, I'd do this every week with you if you want. We can have fun having a podcast every week during the course of the year. But no, you're doing a great job. And I mean, you got your colleges all lined up. You're getting straight A's in high school. Got a great family there, Asher, and all the support you'll ever need. So that's what I had. I had the support doing the reports. How did I get to that point where I am now? Because you had the support of people in your family, my father, mother, to put out the money to support you when you're putting out reports. We were losing money when we started the business. But we had that ability to keep it going. As a 17, 18-year-old kid, I didn't have that kind of ability to do that. But you have a support of your family, and that's the key to the whole thing. Without that, I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
All right, man. And do you have any advice you would give somebody trying to get into maybe your profession?
I think for me, just be persistent and don't let people tell you you're wasting your time. I was told that when I was 18. Why are you wasting your time putting out reports on football? Get a real job. So right. Don't let people deter you from achieving whatever goal you set your sights on, because you're going to have a lot of naysayers. You're going to have a lot of negativity. And you just got to say, hell with that. I'm doing what I'm doing. I believe in it. I'm going to go to school, you get a major in broadcasting, journalism, whatever you want to major in. Who knows? You end up in. You could end up being an agent. You could end up being a writer. You could end up being a broadcaster. There's no limitations. Or you can just decide to be a podcaster. There's more. We didn't have this back when I started in 1979. Actually, we didn't have any of this stuff. Yeah, you know, I had to spend about 2-3 hours a week just calling schools to get find out how many catches a receiver had, what his average per catch was, how many times. You go right to your internet. I want to check out a Clemson receiver. I want to check out a USC tight end. I go right. I couldn't do that. So for you, the opportunities are endless. You're already starting your career right now, doing all these interviews, which is great. Your podcasts are phenomenal. And you can do all this stuff while you're in college. So you'll be coming out at 21, 22, ready to roll. But I would just suggest, do whatever you want to do. As long as it's something you love to do. It's not a, you know, people say everybody's working for the weekend. It was an old song, right? Why was it a song called Everybody's Working for the Weekend? Because they hated their job. They were looking forward to the weekend. They're working for the weekend. You want to be able to work 7 days a week doing something you love to do. Yeah. So this seems like this is your passion. And if it's your passion, you'll be great at it. And you'll have plenty of help along the way from your family. So your dad's phenomenal. Your family's phenomenal. So the bottom line is you got all the support you need. You got the passion, the interest, the ability. Ready to do it, go right ahead. And I'm sure when you get out of college and you want a position somewhere, you'll be getting it. They'll be lining up to bring Asher into the mix. So, again, just keep doing what you're doing is all I can say.
All right. Well, Mel, thank you again. And that's going to do it for episode 11 of Field Pass. Signing off. See you next week.